Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of all, good evening. Welcome to Thursday's update, where we'll take you through the main news of the day, which today includes the Trade Union Council demanding answers from the Chief Minister as they believe the island's healthcare system is still falling short. We're also going to hear some news about fluoride. Also tonight, as communities continue to clear up after this week's storm, questions are being asked about the island's sea defences and where needs work. There's also a new timetable for the construction of a replacement Castle Russian High School, and later, a runner has taken on a mammoth marathon challenge this month. We'll be finding out all about that. As ever, the weather, the traffic and the travel as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email the studio, studio@manxradio.com. We'll start with a roundup of the main news headlines with Lewis Fastamai.
Tim Auld has approved an amended motion forcing government departments to support increased use and promotion of Manx produce through the Isle of Man Food Security Plan. Douglas North MHK John Wannenberg wanted to ensure supermarkets operating on the island procure, supply and promote Manx goods, and that government services prioritise locally produced food. His motion followed a petition by the Manx National Farmers Union, which drew 1,800 signatures. The Department of Education has unveiled a new timeline for the construction of a replacement Castle Russian High School. All being well, the plans will be brought to Tim Auld in June, and if supported, work could start on the site in the summer. Manx Care has confirmed an isolated outbreak of scabies at Nobles Hospital. In a statement to Manx Radio, it says all necessary precautions and procedures are being followed to ensure the safety and well-being of patients and staff. It adds the situation is being carefully monitored and there's no wider risk to the public. In the latest international news, the number of people in hospital in England with flu has increased by 55% in a week. NHS England says it's facing a worst-case scenario December, with an average of 2,660 patients occupying beds. Dr. Connell Watson from the UK Health Security Agency has this advice.
If people can still get vaccinated and haven't been yet, we would very strongly recommend that anybody who hasn't yet take up vaccination in the next few days. Get in touch with the NHS to book an appointment for yourself, or if your kids had missed the school appointment, be in touch with the NHS School Immunisation Service.
Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukraine's presented the US with an updated version of a peace plan. He's told reporters the Americans have discussed an idea to create a free economic zone in parts of the east. It said Kyiv's troops would withdraw under the plan, with territorial concessions needed to be voted on. And police are looking for four men they want to speak to over items stolen from Bristol Museum. More than 600 artefacts were taken from the British Empire and Commonwealth collection in late September. Those are the headlines. I'll be back with the news at 6.
Thanks very much, Lewis. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So still that yellow weather warning for coastal overtopping. That's in place until around 6:15 in the usual locations. Generally, though, dry for the rest of today, although outbreaks of rain will develop through the evening. So that wasn't actually strictly true. They will be heavy at times. Strong and gusty south or southwest winds. The best temperatures will be around 12 Celsius. The rain will clear overnight. The wind will veer west and begin to ease as well. And tomorrow is actually going to be a fine and dry day with moderate or fresh southwest winds and top temperatures of around 11.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674 573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbrough Trading Estate.
A ground source heat pump can save thousands of pounds a year, and you can harness this energy on island with Geothermal Limited, the water borehole experts. Visit drilling.im and see how a ground source heat pump borehole works. That's drilling.im.
Reach the Isle of Man's biggest radio audience with Manx Radio. Airtime, sponsorship and digital opportunities available. For more information on how we can help your business grow its market share, contact the friendly, experienced team on sales at manxradio.com.
Canals Agricultural Supplies have been serving the good folk of the North for over 30 years. Supplying homegrown wheat, whole and rolled oats, working clothing, fencing, animal feeds, parts, tools and emergency supplies. Call Julia on 880206 or find Canals on Facebook.
Direct cremation is just that. An affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478 422.
You're listening to Update here on Manx Radio. It's just coming up to 5 past 5. So the Isle of Man's health service remains unfit for purpose, and the time has come for the Chief Minister to explain why the system delivered under his leadership has not met the promises made. It's a damning verdict from the Trades Union Council following debate in Tynwald this week of an independent review into the island's current health and social care model by the Mersey Internal Audit Agency. Simon Richardson has more details.
The Isle of Man TUC says problems in the system are systemic, well-known and long-standing. Frontline staff continue to hold the service together, but the system they work in remains confused, unstable and overstretched. The MIAA report concluded that the size and scale of the island, along with its governance and funding structures, have limited the ability of Manx Care to fully function as an independent, arm's-length body. Manx Care was established in 2021 following the Sir Jonathan Michael report, which was commissioned by the then Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon and published in 2019. According to the Isle of Man TUC, Mr. Cannon committed to a health and care service that is financially sustainable, properly governed, and fit for purpose for the future. As a result, it says he must now explain why the reforms he promised have not materialised, why governance and financial control are still in disarray, and how long the island is expected to wait for a health system that finally works for patients and staff. The MIAA report was received by Tynwald. A detailed action plan will be considered in due course.
That's Simon Richardson reporting there. Well, in the past half hour, we have had a statement from the Department of Health and Social Care, which says it would like to thank the Isle of Man Trades Union Council for engaging on this important topic, which was debated at length during this week's sitting of Tynwald. In line, it says, with the outcome of that debate, the department will continue working towards returning to Tynwald in February with a full response and implementation plan. And you'll be able to find the full details of that story on the Manx Radio website. Now, a programme to provide fluoride varnish treatments for all local primary schools is going to get underway next year, around 7 months later than originally intended. Siobhan has the details.
The Smile of Man initiative will be delivered by a dedicated team every 6 months and offered to children from reception to year six. From the beginning of next term, consent forms will be sent to all parents and carers to complete. The Children's Oral Health Report, published earlier this year, indicated a higher level of tooth decay in local five-year-olds than in the UK. The programme comes as a result. Fluoride varnish is proven to prevent tooth decay and dental cavities. The pain-free treatment takes 5 minutes and will be applied by a qualified dental nurse in school settings. Minister for the Cabinet Office David Ashford says similar programmes such as Child Smile in Scotland have shown a 62% reduction in the need for fillings. The Smile of Man programme had been expected to start in April this year.
Siobhan reporting there. It's coming up to 5 past 8 and the Department of Education has unveiled a new timetable for the construction of a replacement Castle Rushen High School. It's formed part of an answer to a written Tynwald question, as Amy Griffiths reports.
The department won't publish the full design brief of the project, saying it forms part of the ongoing contract tender and therefore remains commercially sensitive. However, it says a previous project timeline from 2024 is no longer applicable because of the transition to a design and build delivery model. It says the shift to this from a traditional delivery route has needed a full reassessment of sequencing, procurement and market engagement. While there are a number of procurement milestones to reach, the department says some of them have been met. Atkins Realis has been appointed as the integrated consultancy team, while the architectural consortium has also been named, with Shepherd Robson as the lead, McGarrigle Architects providing on-island support, and DWF LLP acting as project counsel with additional technical support from Stantec. These appointments mean the design has been able to progress through the Royal Institute of British Architects Stage 2 and that structured client engagement activity can now start. It plans to appeal for expressions of interest for the design and build contractor this month before appointing them in February 2026. The guaranteed maximum price is hoped to be agreed by early April before a planning application is submitted later that month. All going well, the plans will be brought to Tynwald in June and, if supported, work could start on the site in the summer.
Amy Griffiths reporting. It's coming up to 10 past five here on Update. And the Infrastructure Minister says the level of coastal overtopping seen during Storm Bran this week has really highlighted where work needs to be progressed on the island's sea defence schemes. Several roads and promenades were closed as waves brought stones and debris onto exposed coastal areas, and the Ronaldsway Met Office did issue that rare red weather warning. Well, Dr. Michelle Haywood says the need for better defences against extreme weather events will only become greater in the future.
Castletown was nicely, safely protected by the flood defence there. Ramsey's come very close today to flooding because that low pressure allows the high tide to come in at even higher. The overtopping, we obviously closed several coastal roads to keep people out from that. And I think you could see at the Port Jack end of Douglas Bay, the breaking waves were a good 8 to 10 metres up into the sky, which is always terrifying. We have had some damage to the Douglas seawall, so the entrance barrier on one of those has been damaged, but that's already been investigated. We've put sandbags in place, big one-ton bags, just to stop any further water washing through there, and we'll be looking to rectify that as soon as possible. We've got a number of similar sea defences that we need to get on and progress. West Quay in Ramsey is going in for planning. If it hasn't gone in already, it should be this week. But we've got seawall plans that we need to deliver. The other end of Douglas Prom coming down towards the sea terminal, and then to move towards the Empress end as well, and to look at what sea defence is doing there. And you can see the difference in the debris that's coming over. So the design of the new bit of seawall and that return of the material back into the sea is actually saving us an awful lot of damage, and that's the kind of design that we'll look to extend.
There was a report produced about 9 or 10 years ago which identified all the flood risk areas. I know in the previous government, I think something like 25 of the 150 identified sites had been dealt with. Is enough being done by this current government to effectively adapt to the change in climate?
I think we're doing a fair amount. So obviously flood team has moved from being a Manx Utilities thing to being within DOI, and the team there are really dedicated. There are lots and lots of areas we've been flagging up with them. They've produced the new flood risk maps, which allow for climate change under the new predictions for climate change as well, which is really important because that gives us the long-term perspective on where do we need to be planning for. But I think there are things like Ramsey West Quay that, I mean, that's been in the offing now for God knows how many years. It needs to be delivered, and we need to be able to, you know, that scheme will protect over 500 homes and businesses, and it's so, so important.
That is the Infrastructure Minister, Dr. Michelle Haywood, talking to Phil Gorn there. It's 12 minutes past five. And a government grant contributed 40% towards the purchase of a fishing vessel, which was later used to smuggle drugs to the Isle of Man. Now, this figure was released as part of a Freedom of Information request, as Sian Cowper reports.
The FOI response reveals that the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture's now discontinued Fishing Vessels Financial Assistance Scheme 2003 helped fund the boy Shane. The boat was later used by a group of men to smuggle £310,000 worth of cannabis to the island on the 17th of November 2023. John Skillen, 44, Jordan Corkill, 26, Ashley Harrison, 36, and Jamie Smith, who's 37, were involved in the plot and were jailed in January this year. In its FOI response, DEFA states the grant was made to the applicant in September 2011. The applicant is not named, with DEFA citing data protection rules.
Sean Cowper reporting, and as ever, you can find out more on that story on the Manx Radio website.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
So, there were a couple of emergency closures today, but according to the DOI Facebook, they have now reopened. So, the things to look out for: Port St Mary all this week, four roads is closed so Manx Utilities can fix an electricity cable fault. And in Ramsey, there are temporary lights on West Quay, that's near the swing bridge for demolition work. Looking down at the airport, all looking good down there. Nothing to report on the police pages either, which is always good. And the steam packet, the Manxman, is due into Douglas at around about 6:15, heading out again for Heysham at 7:45.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres. Call Quayside Tyres on 664417 to book your free vehicles winter check so your vehicle is safe for you and other road users.
It's coming up to 5:15, and the Environment Minister says a proposal for a referendum on the Isle of Man's net zero policies was not pragmatic. Now, this motion was put forward, as we know, by the Middle MHK Stu Peters. It was rejected by Timwood members this week. And really, it centred around whether the island should abandon its efforts to reduce carbon emissions as set out in the Climate Change Act of 2021. But Minister Claire Barber's amendment, which removed the referendum proposal and reaffirmed the existing policy approach, was approved instead.
We do a lot of work within climate change team looking at the public view, surveying, trying to pick up where people are at in regards to climate change, you know, and also listening very much to debates we've had in Timwood and feedback we get from the various departments and bodies that have to do reporting, where we know that some of that work is taking more time than I think we'd initially anticipated. And we're looking at how can we make that easier for people while still making sure that the data that we capture is valid. So a bit of a balancing act. I think the challenge that we have with the way in which this has been framed has been well laid out by lots of people today, partly because there are significant issues with the Referendum Act, also in terms of the timing and the risks that would be in play by virtue of there not being any restrictions on funding, and also the fact it's predominantly untested. So you find yourself in a position with something that is scientifically proven. It was interesting that Stu Peters said, I'm not even going to challenge the science actually around this, being potentially the subject of a referendum, but no clarity what that question would look like, which we know the Deemsters would set. But actually, would one question be enough? Because when I talk to people who do have concerns relating to what we're doing with climate change, it's very rare that it's just a one-size-fits-all piece. You know, is it we don't think we need an act, or should we not have signed up to the Paris Agreement, or is it that actually we don't want the wind turbines on the east of the island, we'd rather on the west, or is it that we don't want them at all? Do we not want them onshore? There's just so many different facets to this that I think trying to pin it down to something such as a referendum, I just don't have confidence it would work. And I think it would also be challenging because of the time frame, because of the Referendum Act, and almost certainly because of a host of other things that we haven't even accounted for as yet.
That's the Environment Minister Claire Barber. Now, the Chair of Peel Commissioners says measures introduced by the Legislative Council will mitigate some of the issues brought forward in a new local authority bill. Clause 5 of this bill was seen as controversial by authorities because of the potential for the DOI to impose functions with no financial support. Ray Harmer, a former DOI minister himself, says the lack of clarity over what services would be given and the intention behind the clause was raising suspicion and deep concern between the commissioners.
In broad terms, they're helpful, although in the sense that they mitigate some of the problems, the fact that at least they'll have to consult on the financial impact and things like that. There's a bigger question of why it's even needed, and I still feel that Clause 5 goes some way to sort of break that trust between the department and local authorities, because there was no consultation on it. Ironically, the clause talks about having to consult any changes. But the biggest problem with Clause 5 is the fact that its scope and reach of what can be added to local authorities' responsibilities or costs, you know, particularly when it affects the ratepayer. So, yes, they mitigate, but I think, to be blunt, there's no need for Clause 5, and it's a real question of why they want it and why is it being pursued, because I can't think of a scenario where they actually need this clause.
That was Ray Harmer there, Appeal Commissioner, talking about the clause in that bill, which has now been amended. You're listening to Update here. It is 17 minutes past five, and almost 100 allotments on Johnny Watterson's Lane will have to relocate to a new space in 2028 to make way for more burial plots at the Douglas Lawn Cemetery. The Douglas Council says more space will be needed at the cemetery in the next 4 years, and work is underway to find an alternative location for the allotments. John Moss has been to the site to find out more from the councillor Natalie Byron-Tier.
So we have 99 allotments in total. We also have the areas where we have for green waste, things like that. And of course, when the land was bought, it was born with the existing cemetery, the Lawn Cemetery, back in 2025.
It's quite a big area. Presumably every allotment is taken. It's a popular thing.
We've got 97 at the moment. We've got two that are vacant. So yes, there is a waiting list. The two that are vacant for specific purposes at this point.
This is all going to be levelled and made ready, available to as an extension?
As an extension for the Lawn Cemetery, yes.
People obviously will be getting worried about getting on a list, getting into the new allotments, if I can put it that way. What should they do?
Well, at the moment we're in correspondence with them. They've already been contacted to be advised of the proposed move. If they have, because we obviously have all their contact details, if they have any queries, they can get in touch with us if they're concerned or worried. You know, we're looking for a similar size space to be able to continue, if not bigger.
It is a big space. Yes. Do you have any spaces earmarked?
We do. We're looking at a couple of sites at the moment, two sites at the moment.
In Douglas, on the outskirts?
On the outskirts of Douglas, yeah. One in Douglas and one on the outskirts.
So similar, really, to this location?
Very similar, yeah. And it's greenbelt land we'd be looking for because, you know, we want to keep it natural. And
obviously, we're trying to encourage people to grow their own food. So a development like this, if I call it a development, a green development, is important.
Absolutely, definitely. A gentleman I was speaking to this morning has explained about the pandemic and how much it helped him he lives in an apartment, and having this space meant a lot to him during that time. And I've met with many of the allotment holders up here, and they all are very passionate about what they're doing and have their own personal reasons for doing it.
That's Councillor Natalie Byrontier talking to John there. 20 past five, so if you are not feeling festive just yet, there's a concert at Peel Cathedral this weekend which is sure to change that. It's the Festival of Nine Lessons featuring the Cathedral Choir, and it really will be one of the season's highlights. Some members of the choir join Christy D on 1 to 3 this week, along with organist and director of music, Dr. Peter Lippman.
I inhale the bells are ringing, ding dong, verily the sky is ringing with angels singing.
It is on Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 14th of December at 3:30 at the Cathedral in Peel.
And what a wonderful thing for children and grown-ups as well, but children of all ages, to be able to sing in such a special place, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's been completely revamped and has a superb acoustic for choirs now. So we're really looking forward to the Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols.
Last night, I'm Magnus.
How old are you?
7.
How long have you been singing with the choir?
1 year.
What is going to be your favourite thing to sing on Sunday? What are you looking forward to singing?
Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
We've got Naya with us as well. Hello, Naya, how are you?
Hi, I'm all right, thanks.
How long have you been with the choir for?
About 8 or 9 years now. Yeah.
That's quite a long time. What have been some of your favourite memories? What have you been able to do with the choir that you've really enjoyed?
We did this thing where we went on a tour around like the churches in the Isle of Man, so that was pretty cool.
Do you find that, does that sort of thing interest you as well?
Yeah, I go to quite a few when I go to England.
Do you do music outside of the Cathedral Choir as well?
Well, I play the saxophone as well, but singing I kind of just do whenever I can.
When can we hear you play your saxophone as well? That's cool.
Well, I am playing in the wind band in the QE2 Christmas concert on Tuesday.
Jacob and John are here as well. Jacob, how old are you?
I'm 9.
And how old are you, John?
I'm 10.
How long have you two been in the choir for?
I'd say probably some months. I wouldn't say 1 year.
Okay. And what,
I think.
What do you like most about it, Jacob?
It's you get to sing twice a week.
And what do you like to sing, John? What are some of the pieces that you like to sing?
I like Ding Dong Merrily on High. Uh-huh. I mean, there's so many options for a lot of songs, in my opinion.
Hosanna in excelsis.
Happy Christmas!
Oh, they're just brilliant. And that concert taking place at 3:30 on Sunday, that's the 14th of December. Do get there early to get a seat. OK, have you heard about the man on the Isle of Man who is currently attempting to complete 31 marathons in 31 days? Every day this month, Albert Johnson from Kirkmichael is pounding the pavements as part of efforts to raise money in memory of his friend Graham, who took his own life several years ago. So far, he's raised more than £1,600. That's going towards his fundraiser for Autism Initiatives UK. Lewis has been catching up with Albert in the past hour after he completed marathon number 11.
Yeah, going really well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, my slowest one so far was my first one. So I'm on average, I'm actually getting faster, feeling really strong. My back's a little bit twingy, but it always is.
What can you tell us about your friend Graham, who you're doing this in memory of?
So Graham used to work for me many years ago. He was a really, really decent guy. He would have done anything for you. Real big heart. He's got 3 kids that he sadly left behind as well. Yeah, and I just feel that if he had maybe a little bit more help when he was younger because of his autism, what happened to him, it may never have happened. So quite sad circumstances, really. But yeah.
alongside the marathon challenge, it's not just a physical challenge, but you've got to keep yourself mentally fit as well. So what are you thinking about when you've been out there on the roads?
You're right, especially when it's really windy and then when it's raining as well. Take the other day, for example, I had about 3 millimetre of rain drop on me within the space of about 3 hours. So I got absolutely drenched. And yeah, it was more of a mental battle that day as opposed to a physical one. But I don't know, I've just got a bit of a knack for switching off. So I tend to just keep moving forward, because at the end of the day, every step that I take is another step closer to finishing the run. And then every run that I finish is another day closer to finishing the end of the month.
And looking forward, I mean, you've got 20 more marathons to go. What are you thinking the biggest challenge is going to be over the next few weeks?
The weather, I'd say. I mean, I go for crowns on Strava. Anyone listening to this will probably chuckle at that. And that's pretty much how I started running. Started running in COVID 5 years ago. But yeah, I've always been quite a competitive person anyway. So, and I think running, it's probably the best sport for competitiveness, just because it's pretty much it's you against you. Just want to finish every day and then just get up and do it all over again. But yeah, definitely the wind and the rain, which are the biggest obstacles, are standing in my way to completing this.
Isn't he incredible? Albert Johnson, just over a third of the way through his 31-day marathon challenge. You can find a link to his fundraiser on the Manx Radio website. Rob's here now with the latest sports news.
I get tired just thinking about that level of running.
Yeah, I might have a little nap now, actually.
And a phenomenal effort, absolutely. Okay, so in sport tonight, to start off in football, and a long-term servant of Peel AFC has been awarded the Freedom of the Town. The club secretary, Colin Moore, was presented with the Freedom of Peel by Chair of Peel Town Commissioners, Ray Harmer, during a presentation this week. In a short statement on the club's social media page, Mr. Moore is thanking Peel AFC's committee for nominating him for what he calls a prestigious honour, calling it a privilege to have been part of the club for many years. The Isle of Man Football Association is also congratulating Mr. Moore on the accolade, describing him as a stalwart of the club in addition to his many voluntary roles within the FA itself. In netball, the Isle of Man has announced its squad to take on an international series this weekend. The Isle of Man under-19s will travel to Edinburgh to take part in a Europe Netball under-19s training event from Saturday to Sunday. The 12 players heading to Scotland will be Izzy Burns, Holly Charmer, Grace Cottier, Winnie Davis, Lily Gell, Amelie Hutchinson, Poppy Irving, Sarah Long, Eve Nash, Leah Prentice, Chloe Schofield and Annabelle Thomas. They'll be led by head coach Nicole Presley, who will be assisted by Ailish Harris. And finally, just a few days remain for people to submit nominations for the 2025 Isle of Man Sports Awards. The annual event celebrates achievements and inspiring people across the Manx sporting community, with the latest upcoming ceremony scheduled for Thursday the 26th of February 2026 at the Villa Marina in Douglas. There are 12 accolades which people can submit names for to be in contention for honours, including the coveted Isle of Man Sportsman of the Year and Isle of Man Sportswoman of the Year title. Entries will close this Sunday, the 14th of December, and anyone wanting to put forward a nomination can do so by completing the online form on the Isle of Man Sport website or emailing iomsportsawards, all one word, at gov.im. Details of the categories someone can be nominated for are available at manxradio.com. To be eligible, nominees must be Manx or have resided on the Isle of Man for at least 2 years.
Does that mean I'm eligible?
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
I just need to find a sport, yeah? Before February.
Absolutely, plenty of time. Plenty of time.
I'll work on it. Rob, thank you very much indeed. That is all from Update tonight. Thank you for your company. Coming up next, it's Shaq Lair with Fiona McArdle. Then Jason Moore is with you with Greatest Hits tonight from 6 at 9. It's A Little Light Music with Maurice Powell. And we'll round off the day with After Hours with Ree at 10. Whatever you're doing this evening, have a good one. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.